Hey everyone, and welcome to Divination episode 10. Divination is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller. Our topic this episode is how to create customer journeys that win new business. To help us explore this topic, I was joined by guest host Julie Hall. Julie is the head of Spring Media, a WordPress design and development agency out of the UK. She's also the founder of Women Unlimited, an online magazine and community for entrepreneurial women. Julie and I sat down to talk about how she has used customer journeys to lower her workload, increase her revenue, and turn out better work for both herself and her clients. Here's our conversation. Julie, welcome to Divination.
Hi, Nathan. Thanks so much for having me.
How are you this morning?
I'm really good, thanks. It's afternoon here where I am.
I was just going to ask. I actually kind of forget where exactly you're located.
I'm in Surrey, just outside London.
Okay. I don't know why, but between our pre-interview and now, I totally thought you were based in the United States on the East Coast, like same time zone as me. So I thought we were going to sit here and have our, you know, morning coffee or whatnot together. I spaced on that one. I see you got
I've got a cup of tea.
Oh, nice. And I've got my ginormous mug of coffee that I typically have. I noticed you got the same mic as me. Twins today. I love it. How's it working out for you?
It's great. I love it too. Mics have been one of my big bugbears, and this is number 6. So, oh, wow. And hopefully,
what are some of the other ones you've had?
So I've had a Handy H2N, Handy H2, a Handy H4N. I've got a Handy One too, like the Handy mics. Mm-hmm. I've got a Samson CO1. I've got a Blue Yeti.
Yeah.
And I've got a Blue Snowball, which I think you can probably see it. Oh, maybe just outside of the shot here. Mm-hmm. Here. So, and then I've got, this one's a Rode mic, which I love. It's great.
It's so nice. For anybody who's interested, it's in the gear list on the blog post, but this is called the Rode Procaster, and it is a very nice dynamic microphone for podcasting or broadcasting.
Definitely. And just to kind of explain, I'm not really a mic collector. It's just my room is a bit like an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And this mic manages to deal with it really well, whereas the rest of them don't.
Exactly. And we started this podcast. I did the first several episodes with the Blue Yeti. I think it was Yeti Pro. And great mic for a USB mic. But what these dynamic mics do that I love so much is they cut out so much of that background and room tone. And even if you're recording in an open room like we both are right now, you get such a good, especially if you use like a noise cancellation after the fact effect on it, you get such a good clean sound. It sounds almost like you're in a padded room doing a, you know, voiceover work or a typical broadcast. It sounds great.
Yeah, love it.
All right, cool. So we've got a lot to talk about today. And we typically get things started with a segment called This Week in WordPress. You ready to jump into that?
Certainly am.
All right, great. So this week in WordPress, 3 articles caught my eye, and I sent them ahead of time to Julie so that she could read them and we could talk about them. Article number 1, the 9 web development resources I can't work without in 2015. So this was an article published to WPMU Dev, and it was written by Daniel Pataki. And he actually puts a few things on the list that I'm not sure are going to apply to everybody, but this was like his personal list. He talks about Sketch 3, which is he compares it to Photoshop, but very like specifically for web design and specifically for mobile devices. So that was pretty cool. And then he has some other tools on here, like GT Metrics for measuring site speed, Sprintly for project management, advanced custom fields, UserSnap, and he's got a few others, CodeKit. And I guess, you know, this is going to be very, very much catered to his personal workflow. But I was wondering, Julie, what are some of the development or design tools that you can't work without on a daily or weekly basis?
I didn't know you were going to ask me that. So tools that I can't live without, Photoshop is my tool. I have Sketch, mm-hmm. And I have worked with it. It had a bit of a learning curve, but actually really Photoshop these days with the current Creative Suite is pretty amazing, and it can do so much. It's really flexible. And I think there's a lot to be said with not trying to reinvent the wheel or not having to learn new software, because mm-hmm. you know, let's face it, we've got enough that we've got to stay on top of in the web world anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of the Adobe Creative Suite, the cloud suite. It's so awesome. I mean, I use Photoshop, Illustrator, After Effects, Premiere, Audition, and a few others every single week, if not every day. And they are like seamless together. The workflows back and forth between them all. Like, I couldn't do what I do with the podcast and with Elegant Themes if I didn't use that suite. So that's definitely my can't live without suite. Other than that, I mean, I don't do a lot of web development aside from building, you know, Divi websites. So I don't necessarily use like GitHub and things like that that he put on there, but I do use, as far as a non-development tool goes, I do use a software called Scrivener a lot. And I don't know if you do use that for like your course writing or for document writing or anything?
Not for course writing, but I do have a book in the works.
So. Oh, well, there you go. Scrivener is awesome. For those who don't know, and I put this again, this is another thing that ends up on the production notes of our podcast here is Scrivener is an awesome writing application. And if you're looking to do long form storytelling on the web, writing a book, writing, or even just organizing your blog posts before getting it into WordPress, I think it's a great tool because you have this kind of document file tree that helps you really organize your thoughts, organize your projects. It's definitely worth checking out. Well, yeah, let's jump to the next article, a general pricing guide for WordPress websites. This was written by some guy at Elegant Themes. this is an article I wrote a while back. And so it's not current in the sense that it came out this week, like most of the articles we feature, but it got reblogged this week by the guys over at WP Shout. And I noticed it'd been getting some discussion on the comments again recently. So I wanted to bring it up. It felt really apt for you, Julie, being on the show and, you know, working as an agency yourself. What were some of your thoughts upon reading this article?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. And actually, the article I thought was fantastic. And the reason I thought it was fantastic, because I think there's a lot of people hiding or lots of myths around what people should be charging. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a freelancer or an agency, I think it's really useful to be able to just get a benchmark for what's going on in the industry. And I loved how open you were with that. But what was really interesting to me was the comment, and I'm sure you're going to know which one I'm going to talk about, but there was a comment in there from someone who actually said, I don't think it's very helpful to publish this information.
This is dangerous information. It can't, you know, it's too sensitive for the public.
and I was really surprised by that. And I was actually surprised by the people that agreed with him too, because I don't see any reason to fear making this stuff public knowledge. And you didn't say this is how much a website costs, that you gave people a range of prices.
These ranges are extremely generous in generality too. I mean, they literally range from a $200 DIY site to a $20,000+ custom site. So if you can't fit your services in between that range, you're probably doing something wrong. I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there.
Absolutely. But there is also this thing, I think, where there are lots of people that are charging tiny amounts for the websites that they're creating. Yeah. And one of the things actually I thought that was really interesting was you said, actually, if you're going to create your own website, it's going to cost you between $200 and $1,000anyway.
Right. As a base rate for doing all the work yourself, you're going to be somewhere between $200 and $1,000. And I think, you know, after I published that, you know, I used to have a little email that I would send people that said that if they wanted me to work on their web project. And I'm not like a developer. Like I before doing the podcast and interviewing a bunch of developers and designers, you know, I'm a blogger and I happen to do some websites occasionally for friends, families, organizations that I really liked working with or working for, like nonprofits or whatnot. I would do those on a volunteer basis. So I got a lot of experience designing web stuff, and I had to do a lot of research about, you know, what designers do, their ins and outs, how they run their business. And when I started to get inquiries, I just started emailing people this link because they could not only see my thought process, but they could see first and foremost, like, this is how much you're going to spend if you don't hire me, no matter what. So that's, if you're not willing to spend more than that to have me work on it, then let's just not go down that path. It's not worth it.
Absolutely. And actually, and it's because I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, I'm going to send this to people that have come to me to ask me to quote on a website, because mm-hmm. I think it's really important that people get a sense of actually everything that's involved, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if you're spending at the bottom end of that $200, that leaves you $300 to build an entire site.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you do that? It just, you just don't, right?
Right.
There's, I mean, you do, but you're killing yourself to do it. And one of the things that I found is people that want pay $500 for a website want the same level of service, the commitment, mm-hmm. the quality that someone that spends $5,000 for a website.
Yeah. So there are two people this article is written for primarily. One are clients or prospective clients who just need some guideposts along the way to go, okay, are these quotes I'm getting even in the right ballpark, et cetera, et cetera. The other was for, the developer or designer who is killing themselves churning out cheap websites, not cheap quality necessarily, but just low priced websites. And, you know, I think that do-it-yourself pricing guide was just as much for them as it was for prospective clients, because, you know, if they could look at their own pricing and go, you know, I'm not even charging $1,000 per website, then they're probably like, oh, well, that needs to change, because I'm killing myself doing basically a websites for free, because people would have to pay this amount anyway to do it themselves. It's not, you know, I'm not getting, they're not paying me for my services. They're just paying what they would have to pay anyway to do it.
Absolutely.
To do it all on their own. Cool. Well, I think we can probably move on to the next article. Article number 3, 6 things WordPress developers should do every Sunday to reset for the week ahead. So this was, again, published on WPMU Dev, and it was by Tom Ewer. So the 6 things he recommends developers do to reset is make sure you have up-to-date backups of everything, figure out what needs to be updated or cleaned up, plan out who needs to be reached out to this coming week, ask yourself if anything can be automated, identify important points from user feedback, and create your to-do list using everything you determined from above. He gives a couple other things too, as like bonus points. So come up with a few ideas for marketing and branding, and catch up on your favorite newsletters, blogs, and upcoming conferences. I can say that personally, I like to do as little as possible and preferably absolutely nothing on Sundays.
Me too. And I love that the first one was about updating WordPress.
Right. So like, I think, you know, everything he put on this list, there are things that I would shift to a Monday. Like, that's just how I start my week. But I think the heart of the article is, you know, you do probably need one day a week where you plan, you know, you reset and you plan and you make, you just make a blueprint for how you're going to go about that week. Does that reflect your experience and what you do on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the thing is there are some things that you just need to create a system and a process around. So you don't even really have to think about those things. You definitely don't want to be doing them on a Sunday. But but you just make sure that, you know, you're checking in and you're doing updates. Now, honestly, I usually wait 2 weeks before I do a WordPress update just to make sure that they fix any bugs that everybody finds. But also, I did laugh a bit, and this is particularly for designers, is that come up with some marketing and branding ideas was a bonus option, whereas actually I think
like,
it's a
that's
pretty
my job.
Important part of building and growing your business. So that was sort of an afterthought.
Yeah. I think he makes a lot of good points as well. And this was, I think, more for developers who obviously anybody who has a business, coming up with branding ideas is not an afterthought, but as far as a weekly task goes, it might be something that you squeeze. You're like, if you already have an established brand, you might go, how can I maybe pull up what I have and maybe make a few notes on things that I might want to improve or do in the future. So I don't think the heart of that tip was to say, come up with your whole branding and market. I hope not. And I don't think it was come up with it on a Sunday when everything else is done.
No, but it is, I mean, it is important to review your marketing and activity, you know, look at what blog posts are getting shared, what's resonating with people, making sure that everything's working as it should be, and just ensuring that everything's ticking over. That's, for me, that's what this is really all about, is just making sure that all your pieces are in place as they should be before you go into the next week.
And I guess to combine, to close this one out, to combine this with the first article, which was about tools, essential tools, what kind of things, what kind of tools do you use when you're having your planning day to help get yourself in order and ready to conquer the week?
So I'm not massively sophisticated. I use Google Docs. I think Google Docs is a fantastic tool. It's a great tool for sharing things, plans, spreadsheets, workflows. I've tried things like Basecamp and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just not, it's not worked for me, probably because I'm not kind of really organized enough. Whereas, you know, with something like this where we're sharing the same document, that's, that I really like. But also I do use, I have Google Calendar, which is a shared calendar, things like that. And I block out time for important tasks so that I know what I'm doing when I'm doing it. I also specify certain tasks for particular days of the week.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I try and do my planning the week before. So like on Fridays, Friday is an admin day for me and Monday is a ramp up day for me. So, and then really the bulk of the work happens between Tuesday and Thursday.
Right. I have two kind of tools that I've used for planning outside of Google Apps, because I feel like everybody uses Google Apps to some extent. Like we use, you know, Google Spreadsheets, Google Docs. But as far as like to-do or planning apps, I am a big fan of To-do, which is actually the Swiss version one. I don't know if by Swiss Miss.
Yeah, I've got it on my phone.
It's spelled like Tux Dux. but yeah, that's great. I love using that because especially with their new recurring recurring to-dos, what you can just set it and say, you just put as you're writing it, do this every day or every week or every month, and whatever time you give it, it'll automatically put that on your future calendar. So like if you say do it every month, it'll just repeat every month on that day, and likewise for all the others. So I have a certain, especially doing the show every week, I have a very long list of a certain set number of things that have to happen every week on specific days in order for me to stay on track to get things out. So I just put all of those as recurring tasks. And so every week I basically start with like 80% of my planning done because I'm able to use these apps effectively that way. The other one is Asana. If I'm collaborating with a lot of people, I love Asana. Have you used it that much?
I haven't used it as a team tool.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it works great. It's simple enough to be used as an individual, which I think something like Basecamp or some of these more complex to-do apps are maybe not suited for individuals. They're too big. A little too complex, but Asana can be used for an individual or a team pretty easily. I found it's a good kind of in-between tool there.
Another just little one that you may not be familiar with is Google Keep.
I'm not familiar with it. What's that all about?
So Google Keep is, what's great about it is that it's quite visual. So it allows you to create little compartments for different things, and you can add checkboxes. So you can have weekly tasks, daily tasks that you just go in and you clear the checkboxes and then you redo the checkboxes. And it's, as I say, it's quite visual. It's a bit like Pinterest when it's on your screen.
That's cool.
And you can add a little image on the top of each series of activities. And it's quite fun.
Cool.
It's quite fun for if you're like designery.
Yeah, I think Trello is a little like that too. It's kind of got that card feel to it where projects are presented in that card design.
Yeah.
All right. I think that just about wraps it up for this edition of This Week in WordPress. If you're interested in reading the articles we discussed, YouTube viewers can check the video description for links, and everyone else can find the show notes on our blog. Just go to the community category in the right-hand sidebar and check out the post for Divination Episode 10.
The next segment of the show is where we get to know our guest hosts in a bit more detail and pick their brain on this episode's main topic. Our guest today is Julie Hall, and our topic is how to create customer journeys that win new business. Let's dive in.
The next segment of the show is where we get to know our guest hosts in a bit more detail, pick their brain on this episode's main topic, and hear about their story and the lessons that they've learned along the way. So our guest today is Julie Hall, and our topic is how to create customer journeys that win new business. Let's dive in. So Julie, before we get into customer journeys, I always like to hear about our guest's journey, where they've been and what they've done. So could you tell us maybe a bit about where you're from, what it is you did leading up to working with WordPress, and how you got involved with the work that you're doing today?
Cool. So I started my very first business back in January 2000, working as a headhunter, which I hated.
I think most people know what that is, but just for those who aren't familiar with what a headhunter does, can you explain that?
So I would do recruitment. I would recruit consultants for consultancies, and I would try and steal them away from their existing jobs and move into new jobs. And it was... there's just something a bit sleazy about it.
Yeah, no hard feelings in that industry. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I know people that are great headhunters. It just didn't work for me. So then I started doing consulting, but really felt that I needed a creative outlet. So was self-taught. I taught myself how to build websites using Dreamweaver and Microsoft Access. So gosh, that was back in 2002. And then someone introduced me to WordPress back in 2008. And after that point, I'd had two kids, and I was looking to turn my freelance web hobby into a proper business. And
so what did your hobby look like?
So I was quite lucky, I suppose, probably because I was in the consultancy field. I used to build websites for consultants, and consultants are reasonably well off.
Yeah, yeah. So they're like, I don't want to have to deal with this. Here's a bunch of money. You deal with it.
Basically, yeah. And so
that's
I would
a nice problem
would,
to have.
Yeah, exactly. It was amazing. I would do my own consulting 3 days a week, and then I would do website work 2 days a week. So it was part-time. I didn't do any selling. All the business came to me, which is one of the things we're going to talk about today,
yeah,
which is
absolutely,
you know, how do you make that happen? And so probably I was turning over, I don't know, in US dollars, about $40,000 a year, part-time, without any effort,
wow,
creating websites.
Congratulations. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people in the community that would want to do that for their full-time job.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was great, and it was fun. And I love technology. I think it's amazing. It's a great enabler.
Yeah.
And so then I was introduced to WordPress WordPress, I think it must have been 1.7, 1.8.
Yeah. 2008's ridiculously early in the world. I mean, as far as what it looks like compared to today, I mean, it came out in 2006 and there were improvements all along the way, but it was still very much in the early stages in 2008, when it was starting to build momentum.
Yeah, it looked nothing like it does now.
Nothing,
I can tell you.
Nothing like it looks now. So I think you were talking about making that transition from hobby to doing WordPress web development and design as a business. What was that transition like?
So because I didn't want to travel anymore, I decided it was time for me to up my game, to stop kind of going through this awful cycle that I'm sure most freelancers will recognize, which is the win the business, do the business, win the business, do the business cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
So you're constantly feel like you're chasing.
It's just a constant hustle. And sometimes the grind is too much because there's no rhythm to it. It's just, it's not like doing a long distance race where you can pace yourself. In order to keep on top of things, you have to do all of life as a sprint, and it just gets to be too much.
Exactly. Exactly. So I went through this analysis where I just figured out where most of my business had come from, and realized that actually pretty much all of it had been referrals from two people that were in my network, people I had websites for. And when I clicked into that, I was like, well, so what I need to do is find more people to refer me if I want to grow the business. And at the same time, start to build a team of freelancers, because I didn't want to burden myself with having, offices, an agency.
Yeah. You wanted to go distributed.
Exactly. And I wanted to keep myself pretty nimble and pretty flexible and just bring in the skills that I needed when I needed it. So I decided to join a local networking group called BNI, which I'm sure some of your listeners will be familiar with, but some of them won't.
I think Andrew Palmer mentioned this in his episode as well. It's a referral network, correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And everybody sits around the table and talks about their business, and then they go out, you know, in an ideal world, and they find people that they can refer to you. Yeah. So,
and just to be clear, this is an in-person referral network. This isn't online.
Yes.
This, you go
yeah,
to,
yeah,
you go to, you go to like, what is it? A breakfast?
Yes. So you 7 a.m.
7 a.m. Whew, I'm out. Just kidding. Yeah. 7 a.m. breakfast in person, sit around a table. You share what details again? Just who you are, what you do?
Yeah, who you are, what you do. And there's a whole kind of process around that. And then at the end of the meeting, everybody says, oh, well, I'm, you know, different people say, oh, I met this guy and I would like to introduce you. And, you know, he's looking for a website. And the idea is that it's not just the people that are in the room, but you're looking at the wider network. And incredibly powerful. I mean, in that period, I was able to attribute. So I was with them for 6 months, but the 7 a.m. starts killed me, particularly when I was dropping my daughter off at the babysitter, the childminder, at 6:15 in the morning. Sometimes you're just going to say this is just not right. but during that period, I made £20,000 over a 6 month period that I could directly attribute to that network. So that I had other clients as well, but I was blown away by how powerful this was as a marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm. And so that really kind of leads us into, you know, what you do once you have those customers and how you create their journey. However, before we get into that, still dealing with your story and your journey, there is one other project that I was hoping you could talk about, which is your Women Unlimited project.
So what really helped me to learn about WordPress was, at the time I was going through all this change, I was also learning so much about how to build a successful business. Mm-hmm. I decided I wanted to create a business community called Women Unlimited, which would share that knowledge, share articles, share best practice, share all the things that I was learning. And I needed a platform to be able to do that yeah. allowed me to create effectively an online magazine. Yeah. And that was how I started with WordPress. And I created it using what was then the Revolution theme back in 2008. And it was incredible. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it really gave me a massive platform to build my own credibility, to be able to, it also brought in clients, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, today, looking at the website, I know it's not your primary project anymore, but it's still got a large community, you know, for someone's side project blog. It's, you know, you got over 5,000 people on your Facebook group, over 5,000 in your Google Plus, over 7,000 in your LinkedIn. I mean, that's not insignificant at all. And a very large amount of posts in your archive. I mean, this is a big project. And I guess I was wondering, or I wanted to point out and then get your thoughts on it. I wanted to point out to the rest of the community that, you know, what you're talking about, the idea of having a project that is maybe not your end goal, but is some, it represents the journey to your end goal, is huge, you know, or it can be huge. It's not everybody doesn't have to do that, but it can be very beneficial to kind of chart your journey in front of an audience instead of have it privately and share those lessons as you go, because there's always going to be someone, you know, whatever lesson you learn, there's always going to be someone who could benefit from that. And if you are taking people on that journey with you and they're maybe just a few stages behind or whatever, you know, they're going to share that, they're going to grow with you. And, you know, whether or not you maintain that community forever or not, having that experience and having it in public and having it as a legacy, I think is only going to be beneficial. I've never heard of anybody regretting, you know, starting a successful blog, you know.
No, absolutely. And it has definitely been probably one of the things I'm most proud of in my life. It's been incredible. And I know it has served and helped so many people, both men and women, interestingly, because I do get, you know, I get guys coming on our webinars as well as women. And I've had customers that are men as a result of the work that I've done with Women Unlimited. So it's been an incredible marketing tool, but it has also massively served a huge community of people.
All right. So let's start to shift our conversation to the main topic, which is how to create customer journeys that win new business. So we talked in previous episodes about creating a conversation with your customers, creating sales funnels. There is one thing that I like to point out, which is that, you know, from my perspective, the difference between a customer journey and a sales funnel is you know, its objective is a sale. A customer journey's objective is not only a sale, but it's sort of like experience design. You want to not only close the sale, but you want to do it in a very certain way, very specific way that ideally leaves that client or customer feeling both empowered and positive about the experience, not just, you know, a statistic of, you know, I got their money. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think it's, I think there's so many things that are involved in the customer journey, but it absolutely starts, the sale is only the first step, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason that I would get referred was
I would say, I would say that getting a lead is the first step, and then once, and then getting them to the sale, and then there's maybe a second customer journey after that. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I guess what I'm saying is I'm interested in, I guess, two different customer journeys, not just the one that results in, not just the one that you do after someone comes on board, but also the one leading up to that initial sale.
I suppose I don't necessarily think of that sales process as, to me, it's all one process.
Okay.
And because everything you do is what, the reason you get referrals is because the experience of the customer is so, that the person that's referred you is so good mm-hmm. that's what they're talking about before you've even spoken to the prospect. So it is a full circle, if I'm making sense. It goes from, you know, I think the things that I do differently perhaps than some of the other people, the reason why my clients keep coming back or refer me on to others is because they feel so well cared for. Mm. And it's not just a website that I'm building for them. It's a whole marketing experience that they have and a customer care experience. Mm. So when somebody comes to me as a referral, particularly through when they come as a referral from somebody that has had a website from me already, they're 80% sold. Going right. into that conversation. Yeah. I don't have to tell them I'm a great web designer. I don't have to tell them that the experience is going to be an amazing experience because somebody else has already done that for me. Mm-hmm. And that's why 90 to 95% of my business comes from referral because.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Cause I was talking about, okay, what are the stages of getting people, but your earlier talk about, you know, spending the time to build a referral network and making sure that's in place. That is really that initial customer journey. Cause they're basically just waiting for you to say, yeah, come on board. Like you're now going to be my customer. And then you have a very specific experience that you've crafted for them.
Exactly. And what you do is, you give them confidence, you listen. I mean, this is not new stuff, right? Yeah. And you have to come at it from an understanding that they're not looking for a website. They are looking for what the website is going to do for them. Mm-hmm. So when you understand what their needs and their desires are, it's not just about being a great designer. It's about helping them get the business that they want to get as a result of having a website from you or from someone else.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, yeah.
So that actually brings up a good question is, you know, your work as a web designer, it's actually as an agency called Spring Media, and you bill yourself as a full service design and marketing agency. And I was wondering, is that specifically because you feel like there's, you know, a more integrated service that needs to be offered than just building the website? It's building maybe their business as well?
In a sense, yeah, because I feel when I take on a website project, I'm not just putting pretty designs onto a screen for people to come to. Mm-hmm. I'm there as an advisor. I'm helping them understand what messages they want to put out there, where they want to put those messages, which images are going to help them to get those messages understood by their clients. How are they going to convert them? What's the action that they want someone to take when they come to the mm-hmm. website? So these aren't just design and development issues, right?
Yeah.
But I would say probably 50% of the work that I do really is understanding what the client's goal is, what their customer goal is, and then creating a framework and a mechanism for them to achieve that goal through their website.
And do you, because it can be kind of dizzying if you're taking clients who have a wide variety of specialties themselves to be able to really fully understand what their needs are, do you have like a niche that you service? Do you have an ideal client?
So I work mainly with service businesses because that's the area that I know most and I okay. understand the process that they go through. So I don't tend to do e-commerce sites. Mm-hmm. I also don't tend to work for, product creators. I work with accountants, consultants, coaches, and help them turn their website into the marketing tool that it should be.
Okay, great. Would you mind maybe, I love to just walk through from beginning to end of what that customer journey looks like for one of your ideal clients. So say through your referral network, you get a consultant or a coach who comes to you and says, I'd like to work together. I need a new website. How do you take that conversation? A, explain to them maybe if they don't know what they really need, and then B, put them through an experience and a process that delivers that for them.
So the first thing you need to do is actually qualify the client because mm-hmm. The process that I go through is quite a long one. It's quite a time intensive one. So I need to make sure upfront that the client that I'm doing that with is really genuinely interested.
Yeah.
Right. So neither of us are wasting time. So I tell them up front that to get a website from me starts at about £3,000, about $4,500. And that means that if that's not their budget, then they count themselves out straight away.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that in that general pricing guide that we talked about on the This Week in WordPress segment, that was one of the closing points in that article was qualify your clients. Like it's going to save you so much time. It's going to increase, your business sales and et cetera, because you're only going to be dealing with people who can afford the level of service that you're providing. But that said, I think some people there's always going to be a group that's nervous. And I've tried to over and over again, reassure this group, by getting testimonials from people like you who are making this process work, they're always going to be worried that if they qualify out too many clients, they're just not going to have any business. Can you speak to that for a second?
Yeah. So when I first started out really, not back in the early days, but in about 2008, when I decided I was going to ramp up my business, I was one of those £500 mm-hmm. Website designers when I was looking for new clients. So these were for clients that weren't referred to me. And that was, as I said, when I quickly discovered that people that spend that kind of money want the same level of love, attention, quality mm-hmm. as someone that spends more. And I decided after doing two websites at that price point that I just wasn't going to play that game. And when you do that, when you stop lowballing yourself, when you recognize the value that you bring, then
I feel like that's a great meme. Stop lowballing yourself. Can I put your face and a quote together for that?
Absolutely.
I love it.
But when you actually really recognize the value that you bring to the table, the quality mm-hmm. of what you can produce, and you decide that you're going to up your game and you're going to charge more, then you only need two clients at £3,000 versus what would that be? So that would be 12 websites you would have to make.
It's an absurd amount of work. And I think a lot of people find themselves in that position. And it takes a bit of a mental shift for them to go, oh, yeah, like I don't need 12 clients at once to be secure. But I also think, the part of that is, well, what if one of those clients leaves? All of a sudden, half of my income's gone. But then again, that's where the referral network comes in. That's where maybe scheduling ahead comes in. And you want to have, people a few months in advance who you're working towards their stuff and they know that you're coming up to their project. So we've established that.
Just on that,
I would also say
that, you build in an ongoing maintenance program with them because mm-hmm. people are going to want to update. They're going to want their WordPress site updated. They're going to they're going to want new things added, new pieces of functionality. So you build that into the sale. You have an ongoing mm-hmm. sale with them. You have the hosting, you have the security, because security is a big issue with WordPress.
Mm-hmm. We went through a big burst of, I don't know if you saw it like last week or a week and a half ago, automated attacks on WordPress sites went through the roof.
I'm getting a lot of it because I've got one of those, I've got Security, the plugin, and mm-hmm. it's telling me every time.
Sending notifications to your email, by the way, your sites are under attack again.
It's a nightmare. But so you have to be on the ball with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And if it's happening to us, it's happening to our clients, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they want that reassurance. They want to know that their site's being looked after. So you just build a package around that. That's on a, you know, on an ongoing basis, on a quarterly basis, a monthly basis, a yearly basis, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that helps to build that ongoing revenue in as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you start to kind of create this, instead of this wavy cycle, you start to create, you know, hopefully one that goes like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's building and growing all the time. And then you can, when you know you've got work coming in, you can start bringing in people to help out with different elements of it. And you can grow your, start to grow your business with confidence. Or if you hate managing people, and I must admit, it's not my favorite thing, right? Because I've made a lot of mistakes in this mm-hmm. area. Then you just decide you're just going to be the best damn web designer. Can I say that? Can
yeah.
you use that? Yeah, the best damn web designer out there. and you're going to make sure that your clients love you and keep coming back.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think, like, to your point of, like, you know, the trajectory of your work day or your work life, I love that idea of it going from sort of an erratic, like, I'm always doing something, to like a smooth, like, I have ups and downs, I have ebbs and flows, I can lead a normal life, I have weekends, you know, all that stuff starts to click when you have the right clients at the right package, at the right package of services.
Yeah. Now, to go back to your point about that customer journey.
Yeah, that was my next question, or my next lead. And would say, like, we've qualified clients, now what?
So when you're selling in your service, you also have to sell in the time it's going to take to get all the information you need to deliver a great website.
Right. So it's not just the work, it's the, and not just the planning, but it's the information gathering.
Exactly. And the process flow. So, you know, copywriting is a killer, right? So the clients quite often will hire you to take on a website, and then they become the block because the copy's not finished, or, you know, and so what should have been a 3 to 4 week project drags yes. on and on and on.
Yeah.
So what I do is I actually I do the design phase first. So we say we do the design, but we don't go into development until we've got all the copy.
So that makes a lot of sense.
We split out the
work. And you charge for the intervening time so that there's an incentive for them to turn that copy in as soon as possible.
Absolutely. We don't charge them a lot, but we do definitely, you know, agree that both of us have a role to play in getting this website mm-hmm. out. And we're keeping our time free for that client.
Yeah, exactly. And that's right? huge. I mean, your time is either filled up or it's not. And if they're and if they're hoping to just keep you on free retainer, that's not going to work out.
It's not going to work out. So we have we basically set the deadline that we have all the copy by the end of the design phase. Mm. And then we kind of manage, and then we can't, if they don't have it to us, then we can't guarantee our delivery dates. Mm-hmm. So we're just really clear on that. And we also have a very lengthy and thorough briefing process, which is where we go through this process of understanding what their objectives, the things I talked mm-hmm. about before, what they want to achieve, what are the elements of the site, what's the best way to deliver that, because sometimes they overcomplicate it and it's up to us to simplify it, and just to take all the stuff that's going on in their head and map it out, get it into a plan. And then we go into the design phase, which generally involves doing a homepage design first. So we get the basic look and feel of the site ready. And then if there are complex pages inside, so sometimes the team page might be complex or the contact page, or they might want some specialist graphics.
Sure.
So that would then be done as a separate exercise. That's kind of a phase two in the design phase. And the design phase, depending on the size of the project, can take anywhere from 2 to 5 days. I mean, you know, man days of work. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, sort of something you knock up in a couple of hours. It's real work, and you charge the client for that. And one of the things I found, I'm in a Divi group on Facebook, and one of the people in there had said, "You charge people for the design?" I'm like, "Yes, I charge people for the design. Of course I do."
Not just the finished project, the mock-up design, the design that leads to the finished project. So before you start developing the website itself, you're I'm just trying to make that clear. I know you understand.
You're
charging up for, you know, the concept that I'm assuming you mock up in Photoshop, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I know what all the elements are going to be, and I understand how the software works that we're, the platform that we're building it on, which quite often is Divi because because I love its flexibility. And then the great thing too is it also means from an invoicing perspective, we invoice at the start of the project, we invoice after the design phase before the development phase, and then we invoice at the end. And that tends to be a 40-40-20 split.
40%
up front, 40% after the design. So before we even go into development, we have 80% of the project fee.
Yeah, that's huge. That's awesome. That's a big boost of security for you guys. And it's also, I think, incentive for the client to stay engaged because there's not only progress that's being made on their project, but they're actively having to stay involved. And the amount of their next invoice depends on how involved they are in that process.
Well, that's exactly it. When I first started building sites, I used to invoice the client at the end, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it would be 7-8 months before I could invoice for it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a killer.
It's so killer. Like, what do you do in the meantime? Well, the answer is you don't pay your bills.
Yeah, exactly.
So one thing I want to make sure we circle back around and talk about, just so everybody knows, we've got this customer journey established. It's, you know, referral network. So you have referral process, then you have qualification, then you have your information gathering and planning, then you have initial design, then you have actual design and development, and then you have deliver and test. So these are the stages, but one of the things we talked about when defining a customer journey is that this journey has things kind of baked into it that both empower and take into account the feeling of the customer as they navigate through that. So far we've sort of talked about how to protect yourself and get what you need out of the project or out of that process. But how does one make the customer feel good, make the customer feel like they're being empowered to improve their business, make the customer feel like, you know, they're getting all the value that they're putting into it back out and, you know, obviously more value than they're putting in.
Yeah.
Money.
So, but that's really about keeping in touch with them. It's about conversation. It's about doing what you say you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And it's confidence. I think a lot of what I see in the industry, and I've got a friend of mine who is going through this. So she went for a cheaper option.
Okay.
And she is working with a company that was supposed to have the website completed by, actually, I think it was today or yesterday. And he didn't do the design phase. So he's just building it on the fly.
Oh,
right?
Wow. That's hard to do. I mean, it's hard to do.
It is hard to do. And you just don't get the same quality because the thinking hasn't gone into how the different components fit together. Also, he says all the right things when she speaks to him on the phone. And a week later, nothing's happening. Right? For me, that is a massive difference between her experience that she's getting and the experience that my clients get.
Sure.
Right. I'm there all the time. I'm updating them. I'm chasing them. I'm talking to them about what's going on. I'm showing them things that we're doing. Though I do recommend that you don't show a client a half finished page because they start to get a bit panicky.
Yeah.
And there is a big piece about keeping that confidence in you going with the client, making sure at all times that they feel safe, that they feel like they've chosen the right designer, they feel encouraged, that you really get them, and by involving them all the way through the process rather than going away and doing a massive amount of work and then coming back and showing them and have it be all wrong.
Yeah.
If you can keep them involved all the way through, then they feel comfortable that their money is going into a into a good place, that they're going to get a great result out of the end of it.
So it's not just being confident yourself, but it's actively building your client's confidence in the project and the vision. You know, I think one thing that you've done on your website, and I think probably with the documents that you share back and forth with your clients, I don't know, I haven't seen those, but it seems like you have really taken time to craft those elements that that are meant to be guides for your clients. And you made them beautiful. You've made them easy to understand and follow. And I think as far as that confidence building goes, that's something they're going to look at and they're going to go, oh, this person has their shit together. I can trust them.
I mean, hopefully.
Like, I think, you know, that's just important. I can't, you know, stress that enough, is that, you know, your presentation, whether or not you know what you're doing or not, that's going to have a huge impact on whether, on what people perceive you to be, you know? So, you can be a genius, but if people's perception of you is, you know, a bumbling idiot, they're going to think of you as a bumbling idiot, you know? So I think your site is a good example of having done that well. Are there any other elements of the process that you've intentionally crafted in the same way that you've crafted, say, your services page to evoke that confidence?
Yeah. So when I go through the briefing process with the client, my briefing process, once I have qualified them and I'm pretty comfortable that if I put the right offer in front of them, that they will go with me, I'm quite happy to spend an hour and a half, 2 hours before they've committed, going through that process of understanding their business. And then from that, I put together a proposal document, which is not just a how much this is going to cost, but it outlines pretty much everything that I see, the value that, that I think I can bring, the outcomes that they want to get, and then have the price on it. And that is a, you know, that I put a lot of time, like you said, into the way that that looks, so that, and the information that goes in there. So, and I have been told by a lot of my clients that that process has actually helped them really understand their business much greater than they did beforehand.
Mm-hmm. And I think having that, before they come on board officially as a client is huge, because I think that communicates that you're not desperate for a quick sale. It communicates that you're a professional and you want to do a good job, whether, you know, you don't just want their business. You want their business if they're on board to do it, you know, the right way. And I think, you know, you don't have to explicitly state that. In fact, I'd probably recommend not saying that, those things, you know, having those documents, having this customer journey set up a specific way, there's a lot of, you know, nonverbal communication that goes into that to help instill that sense of confidence in the project and in what you're doing in your process. And that'll translate.
Yeah. And I think it's really important, too, to keep the conversation going. So one of the things that I can feel a bit challenging, or lots of people don't do, is follow up properly. So you want to make sure that you're not just sending stuff out into the ether and then never find out whether or not you get the work, right? You need to follow up.
Absolutely.
People.
And how do you do that?
Well, I tell people when I send it off to them that I'm going to give them a ring in 2 days.
Okay. Well, we talked with Andrew a few episodes ago, and he has a 4-week automated email cycle that says, you know, hey, welcome to my site and what I do, my email list. Here's something you might be interested in, like a free resource. Hey, we might want to work together. And then the fourth one is, I'm going to give you a call. So it sounds like that's very similar. The idea of, you know, let's put a deadline on this. I'm going to follow up with you. I either want to talk with you or chat with you somehow, whether it's email. So it sounds like it works.
It does. And I would say, you know, probably my conversion rate on my proposals is probably about 70%.
That's pretty high.
So, yeah, well, and that's because when people work with us, it's because, as I said, they're already sold, and they often don't even go anywhere else. You know?
Right. They come to you because they got a referral and they don't feel the need to broaden that search because they trust the person who gave them that referral.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, and so my whole business development cycle actually is not that painful. But the other thing that I would just suggest is, you know, it's really important if you're running your own business, like a, your own design business, you don't be spending all your time on the computer. Because I saw this, I don't know where I saw this, but it's completely true, which is, you know, in the online world, everybody's looking for the cheapest thing. But if you go out to your local networks, your local networking meetings, the things that are going on where business owners are going, your chambers of commerce, those people are real business owners with real money, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a great point, because I think a lot of times when you're, if you don't have a big website, if you don't have a lot of traffic coming in to a targeted market, how in the world are you to know that all your effort of creating stuff for your website and creating things for your social networks, that that's actually getting out to anybody? You don't. You really have no idea if it's getting out there. I mean, you actually probably have a decent idea when you can look at your share counts, but you don't have an assurance, I guess, that it's getting the distribution that you want or the distribution that reflects the time and effort that you've put into it. But if you'll just walk down the street and talk to a group of people with money in their pocket that are perfect fit for your niche, then hey, guess what? You've got a lot of business staring you in the face, and it might actually result or come about from a lot less effort than doing something elaborate online to try to garner attention.
I guarantee that you would get more money, more clients, more business from going to a local networking event than you would online. Because online, you're competing with the whole world.
Yeah, that's right? A great point. Absolutely.
Whereas locally, you're probably going to have maybe 10 other web businesses, unless you're kind of in the middle of London. But, you know, in towns, small towns and cities, there's just not that much competition. And if you're a good person, a good guy, you've got, you know, you look the part, you know what you're talking about, you give them confidence, then over time, you know, and you keep those relationships going, then when they need a website, quite often you're the person they come to.
Absolutely. So we're getting close to the end of our time limit on our interview. And I always like to end these interviews with a parting thought. And typically what that parting thought is it's the guest host, your kind of crystallization of an important point on our main topic. Our topic today has been how to create customer journeys that win new business. We've talked about a process. We've talked about how to take care of yourself and your client throughout that process. I think there's probably going to be a lot of people at this point who are sold on the idea. So my final question to you is, what is a good starting place or a must-have resource for those who are interested in understanding the idea of customer journeys and kind of having a roadmap for crafting their own for whatever it is that they do? You're like, look at my website.
Now, where is a good?
I guess I could rephrase that and say, what did you do? You know, that led you to, because this is, I mean, I'm sure it was a bit evolution, but I'm sure the idea at some point struck home to you, and you said, I need to do this because it's going to improve, you know, improve my business. I'm thinking specifically about the point in which you said, I need to stop running around and doing these cheap websites. I need to craft, you know, a whole process and cycle, that sales cycle and process for getting business that is going to pay higher. I guess, where did that come from and what helped you make that transition?
Yeah. Well, I suppose because what was going on for me at the time was, you know, I was looking for ways to grow my business beyond myself. So there were, I started, do you know what it was? Honestly, I just started treating my business like a business. I stopped thinking about myself as a web designer, a freelance web designer, and I decided I was going to turn my business into a small boutique agency, which meant that I needed to up my game and I had to do lots of research. So I was probably at the time using business sites. You know, I was being business smart about what I was doing. And I think there are some amazing resources out there, like Forbes is great, Inc. is great, the American Express Forum is great, but also places like Envato. You know, there are lots of places. I'm sure, actually, the Elegant Themes site will have articles and posts which are about just being smarter and more commercial about how you run your business. But you need to recognize you're not just a web designer, you're a business owner.
I think that's a great point. And I think that's something I've heard other people in other specialties, blogging or, you know, digital strategy, where, you know, they had to stop thinking. I think particularly for anyone who's coming out of school where they've lived inside of a system for a while, or they've had a job where they're just a paycheck, you know, gatherer every month or week or whatever it is, and they start working for themselves, it almost feels like they're cheating. They're like, oh yeah, this is just this thing I do where, you know, I get a couple clients here, I get a couple clients there, and I don't have to go to work every day, you know, like,
totally.
Right. But that's how they kind of think of it in their head, even if that's not how it kind of works out on a daily basis. And so that shift from this is just something I do to avoid a real job to I'm a business owner and I need to run this company as if I had, you know, 100 employees or something. What, exactly. You know, what would I do? So I think that's a great point. And I think it kind of captures, if nothing else, the absolute mentality that needs to take over for people to really, start caring and crafting these types of customer journeys and processes that are going to make their business grow.
Yeah. And be a professional, you know, that's it. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Just be a professional. Treat your clients with respect. Treat your business with respect. Treat yourself with respect.
Sounds like a great, great closing thought. I love it. Julie, thank you so much for joining us on Divination today.
Oh, I've loved it, Nathan. It's been a blast.
I'd like to extend another big thank you to Julie for taking the time to come on the show. I think she had a lot of great tips and insights to share that could help to grow just about anyone's design and development business. We've got one more segment left in this episode, another edition of Divi Quick Tip. In this Divi Quick Tip, I'm going to show you how to create a bouncing scroll down arrow using some CSS animation. This is perfect for pairing with Divi's full width header module, as it helps viewers who may be awed by your beautiful full width image or video from recognizing that there is indeed more content to view further down the page. Here's how it's done. First, make sure you have a full width header module in place by navigating to your page builder, clicking Add New Full Width Section, and choosing Full Width Header. In the Full Width Header module, you'll want to make sure that you have a scroll down button and arrow symbol turned on. When you've made your selections, click Save and Close, then make sure to update your page. Now you will have a full width header that looks something like this. But what we want to do now is animate that scroll down arrow with a nice little bounce. To do that, navigate to your ePanel by going to Divi, Theme Options, General Settings. Scroll to the bottom and paste the following code into your custom CSS panel. You can find this CSS in the accompanying blog post for this video. Check out the video description for a link or go to elegantthemes.com/blog and then find the blog post for Divination Episode 10 in the Community category. Once you've pasted the code into the CSS panel, click Save. On the front end of your website, refresh the page and you should now have a scroll down arrow that does a subtle little bounce to grab your site visitors' attention. Well, that's it for this Divi Quick Tip. If you have a Divi Quick Tip request, you can submit it via a comment, a tweet to @elegantthemes, or by email to me at podcast@elegantthemes.com with the subject line Divi Quick Tip Request. I've got one quick announcement before signing off today. This is episode 10. It's kind of hard to believe, but we've already created roughly 10 hours of content, and we've got a lot more to come in the future. However, we are going to be splitting up our show into seasons with short breaks in between so that we can take stock of what we've created so far, make improvements, and plan the next season so that it'll be even better than the one that preceded it. Our first break will take place after episode 15, which will be released during the last full week of November. We will then take the month of December off and come back in January. I know we've still got 5 weeks out from that date, but I just wanted to make sure that this break didn't take anybody by surprise. We've got a lot of Divi-related awesomeness to share with you this season, including next week's episode, in which I sit down with Leslie Bernal to talk about how to filter out problem clients.
Definitely getting content can be an issue. A lot of times in the beginning, clients are very gung-ho of like, yes, I'll get you the text, the photos, mm-hmm. all this. And then weeks go by and I don't, you know, hear from them. And in that time, I may have picked up some work. So now they're kind of on the back burner.
But then when they
get it to me, they're kind of expected, okay, well, now I have it, you know, okay, you know, how many, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours, what are we talking here?
That concludes this episode of Divination. See you next week.